It's time for Supply Chain Now. Broadcasting live from the supply chain capital of the country, Atlanta, Georgia. Heard around the world, Supply Chain Now spotlights the best in all things supply chain. The people, the technologies, the best practices, and the critical issues of the day. And now, here are your hosts.
Hey, good morning. Scott Luden, Greg White with you here on Supply Chain Now. Welcome back to today's show. Greg, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing very well, Scott. How are you doing?
Doing fantastic. Had a great pre-show conversation with our guest here today. Excited about sharing his story and the company's story with our audience.
Yeah, we've already been around the world today with the discussions we've had, haven't we? So it's good to be back.
Yes. And this will
even if only virtually back.
This will bring it full circle for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Where we're talking with a business leader from a company that is on a mission to solve one of the transportation industry's greatest challenges, universally probably, safe, secure parking and storage options. So we're going to be working really hard, as always, to increase and enhance your supply chain leadership IQ. More to come on that in just a moment. But Greg, before we get started here, if folks enjoy today's conversation, where would you direct our listeners?
Google? No. SupplyChainNow.com, of course. Where else? Or you can go anywhere you get your podcasts and subscribe, or YouTube. We have so many options, Scott.
It's we are in the options business. You're right.
That's right.
So subscribe so you don't miss a single thing, because you don't want to miss conversations just like this here. So with no further ado, let's welcome in our featured guest here today, Lance Theobald, CEO and co-founder of Secure Space. Lance, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Scott. It's great to be here.
Well, we're excited to have you. We've got a variety of common friends, as we've found out. And goodness gracious, as we've learned in doing our homework, you and the Secure Space team have been on an incredible trajectory. We're going to dive in more to that here today. Greg, I'm excited. Are you?
Yeah. This is a meaningful solution that we've talked about a lot, right? So, yeah, let's do this.
Let's do it. So, Lance, before we get into the heavy stuff and get into work stuff, let's get to know you better. So tell us, where are you from, and give us an anecdote or two about your upbringing.
So I grew up in Southwest Missouri, down in the Ozarks. If you've seen that Netflix show, it's a little bit different. My upbringing was slightly different than that show. But, same neck of the woods. You know, graduated from high school in Southwest Missouri, went to Miami University in Ohio, got a degree in accounting about a little over a decade ago, and have kind of traversed the world across the supply chain and logistics industries and the defense contracting and military worlds as well over the past decade.
All right, so I got to circle back. You mentioned the Ozarks, which is one of the biggest shows, certainly on Netflix and probably beyond in recent years. And you mentioned how it's a little bit different for your upbringing. When you think of your childhood and those formative years growing up in that neck of the woods, what's one thing that really comes to mind that you may not get a chance to do as often these days?
Oh, man, the beauty of kind of the Ozark Mountains, the lakes, the rivers, the forests. I was very fortunate to grow up on a large farm a couple miles outside of Springfield, Missouri. And my siblings and I spent the bulk of our childhood summers, weekends, hunting, fishing, just kind of going outdoors and experiencing all that. You know, I grew up in the era, and I'm not that old, but I grew up in the era that predated social media and all this connected technology that we have. That was something that's a memory I cherish from my childhood. It's something that I try to bring to my children. They have three kids, ages 2, 3, and 5. And I try to get them outdoors and kind of experiencing the world, not behind a screen, you know, up close and personal. And that's Southwest Missouri really accommodates.
Love that. So 2, 3, and 5. God rest your soul, Lance. Man, that's impressive. Hey, so you live in the Charlotte area now. Is that right?
That's correct. Yep.
And one final question about Missouri. You mentioned your siblings. How big of a family did you grow up in?
I have 6 siblings, 2 brothers. One of them works for me, and 4 sisters. And we're kind of spread across the world these days.
Love that. You had a fighting upbringing. You had to get an extra snack or to be heard, right?
Probably to eat your own cereal.
There was always a competition with the first plate to get to seconds, right? You got to scarf it down, and then you can enjoy the meal if you get that second plate.
Well, I love that, and I love how you're applying those things you value growing up to your family now, and the awesome opportunity you have to work with one of your siblings. That's fantastic.
Absolutely.
All right, so before I turn over to Greg, one of the things we hear a lot about, especially in the information age, where we're really – you know, we're trying to find signals and avoid the noise, right? Not avoid the noid, the old pizza jingle from the 80s, but avoid the noise. So, you know, we all have probably a short list of sites or other sources for really good news related to business or supply chain or otherwise. What is part of your daily consumption when it comes to really good information?
There are a couple of great sources across the spectrum. You've got Supply Chain Now. You know, great source of continuing information.
Ching.
I enjoy catching up with the articles that are coming out of FreightWaves. You know, I'm just continually more impressed by what Craig and his team are doing over there. And I've been a longtime reader of the Journal of Commerce as well. I think they've been around just about as long as the United States, if I remember correctly. And
Ben Franklin printed that originally, didn't he?
Yeah, I think he might have. Actually, it's pretty close to that.
Yeah.
But, you know, Eric Johnson, one of their technology editors over there, has here in recent, the last couple of months, he's pushed out a weekly newsletter that I've really enjoyed, kind of long form expositions or deep dives on different areas of the intersection of technology and logistics. The whole world says there's no real technology adoption or logistics is slow to adopt technology. And I think he does a good job of breaking that down and kind of countering that idea in a lot of his recent articles.
Well put. And we admire those folks as well. What's really neat to be in this digital content space we're in is that sense of community. You know, whether it's Craig or Tim Dooner, who's been on the show, Eric Johnson's on the show a few weeks ago, really admire and appreciate what they're doing as we work together to amplify what incredible leaders like you and others are doing to help make supply chain work better and work like it's 2050 and not 1982. We can pick on whatever year in the 80s we want to pick on. But I appreciate you sharing that. All right. So, Greg, let's get a sense of his professional journey a bit.
Yeah. So it feels like supply chain might be a bit of a natural, you being from around Springfield, it being such an enormous trucking hub for so many years. But tell us a little bit about your professional journey before Secure Space. Tell us a little bit about some of the places and people that you've been and seen, and some of the things that may have influenced you significantly. Any aha moments?
You know, kind of starting out after college, I got a degree in accounting, and with the conclusion of my first accounting course, I decided I did not want to be an accountant, but that was the language of business, and so stuck that one out. I actually joined the Navy my senior year of college, did a delayed entry program coming out of college, went through officer candidate school, and sort of launched my career with the Navy. A short time later, I started working for a defense contracting company that had contracts and operations all across the world, really. Got to work on some really cool projects with them, one of which was a contract with the Defense Logistics Agency, which is probably one of the biggest logistics entities in the world, frankly. And that took me over to Afghanistan and across the Middle East. So that was a really interesting thing to be doing in my mid-20s, kind of get my first introduction to logistics in the professional sense. You know, in Springfield, everything's about trucking, but I just kind of saw it happen. I was never part of it. My wife and I were, you know, coming back from the Middle East, my wife and I were starting to talk about starting a family and everything that would mean, and decided, you know, heading back to an active war zone probably wasn't the best long-term decision as we embarked upon, you know, starting a family. So I took a job I was in Charlotte, North Carolina at the time, took a job with a company called Direct Chassis Link, or DCLI. They are the largest provider of marine and domestic chassis in the United States. And started off there as a project manager, helping them manage integrations and acquisitions of the former steamship line fleets. In the United States, it's kind of unique. The ocean carriers used to own all of the chassis, and this is only in the U.S., and then provide those chassis to their customers. They went on a divestment splurge in the early 2010s, which is when I joined, or shortly before I joined DCLI. And so they brought me in to help kind of manage some of those acquisitions. Did that for about a year and 2 months, 3 months, and then moved into a commercial role, overseeing their sales team and sales efforts on the West Coast. And that's really, that's kind of where the aha moment happened. It wasn't a moment, it was a series of moments. Probably actually took me a little bit longer than it should have to see what, see the opportunities kind of come together for what would eventually become Secure Space. My team and I were tasked with leasing chassis for DCLI to motor carriers, shippers, people all over the spectrum of the supply chain. And we, you know, one of the things that I would consistently see, especially in cities like Los Angeles, Oakland, Seattle, you know, big, big seaport hubs, but also home to the most expensive real estate in the United States, is your small to mid-sized trucking companies particularly would have almost an impossible time trying to find real estate from which to operate. So they might have access to drivers, trucks, freight, all the elements are there, but there was no real readily accessible or available real estate that they could operate from. If it's parking trucks, if it's storing containers, whatever it might be. So about four in every five meetings with these smaller carriers to larger carriers, you'd have companies that were at a real estate deficit. They could never find enough. You could take a drive out in Compton, California right now and probably see loaded containers parked on the side of the road, especially right now. You know, it's November, high to peak season. I'm sure the shippers would be very unhappy. The shippers who own the goods inside those containers would be unhappy if they saw their merchandise out there.
Hey, Lance, real quick, speaking of ports of L.A. and Long Beach, I was reading earlier, some analysts say that it hasn't been this congested in 8 to 10 years.
It's wild. You know, it's a lot of it, I think, is COVID driven. There's a lot of factors right now, right? You had the stimulus back in, I can't remember when that was now. 2020 has lasted for about a decade already. So I'm losing track of time. But, you know, it's that the $2 trillion in stimulus that was injected into the economy. This is an armchair economist speaking to you now, you know, fueled an enormous amount of personal consumption, business consumption, and factories in Asia had shut down for an extended period of time. First due to Chinese New Year, and then an extended period beyond that because of the very extreme measures those countries took in combating COVID. But then they turned back up again, and we've seen peak seasons now for, this is our third peak season as a company, and the last two don't hold a candle to the volumes that we're seeing, particularly on the West Coast right now. It's absolutely incredible, the volumes that are coming in.
We just did a live show that will have aired probably a couple weeks before this airs, but with US Bank, who has the freight payment index, and they saw an enormous uplift. This won't surprise you, on the West Coast, mostly the California ports, and in the Southeast. So mostly Savannah, Jacksonville, Charleston. And we did hear a lot about congestion there. So it's interesting that as an inspiration. It's also interesting the alignment of coming from a trucking hub, though you weren't, as you said, involved in it, going to the Navy, then coming back and dealing with ocean and ground transportation freight. And then this inspiration, I mean, maybe this was your aha moment, this inspiration of seeing containers on the side of the road and thinking somebody needs to do something about that, which, you know, as Scott and I said earlier, that's something we've been talking about for quite some time, and especially now with so much traffic. So tell us a little bit about Secure Space, how you came up with the idea. I mean, just carry that forward a little bit. How you came up with the idea, what problem does it solve, and, you know, and a little bit about what the company is doing or has been doing for the last couple, 3 years. Seems like something interesting might have happened fairly recently, Lance. Maybe you could tell us about that.
I can tell you a little bit more about that. Yeah. Yeah. In late 2017, I was still working for DCLI. I had taken a job overseeing their nationwide sales force. But I just had this burning kind of desire to do something, you know, jump out, be an entrepreneur, do something. And I'd seen this opportunity in Los Angeles. You know, again, vast majority of carriers, motor carriers, don't have access to real estate. Industrial real estate, particularly the logistics subset of commercial, has been one of the best performing subsectors of all of real estate for the last 45, 46 straight quarters. Just up and to the right growth constantly. These motor carriers are stuck between a rock and a hard place. They need access to ample real estate to grow their operations or to operate fluidly. And it's at the same time, the most expensive, it's incredibly expensive and it's getting more expensive and they're not making any more of it. Right.
Right.
So the big guys like Amazon or Walmart who have, you know, nearly limitless funding can come in and gobble up anything that they need on long-term leases. Meanwhile, the vast majority of carriers and operators don't have those kind of resources to take down these leases.
Hey, Lance and Greg, if I can interject for a second, I'm detecting a sense of a democratization of supply chain coming, which we love here, Lance. Greg and I are big fans of that.
Hey, that's what drives us. That's what drives us. You know, we look to Airbnb initially as kind of an instructive business model. You know, if you have a spare room or a vacation home or whatever it might be, that's just a cost of, you know, whatever your pursuits are. You know, your house is just a cost. Airbnb gave you and me this opportunity to lease that out and generate some income, some found revenue. No additional costs, really. It's just pure bottom line. Goes straight to your bank account. So took the same model and brought it to the supply chain industry. We partner with a wide array of different businesses that have these facilities. It could be some of those big retailers or big trucking companies. It could be small trucking companies that, you know, have a deal on a piece of real estate, but they don't utilize all of it. So what our model has done is taken kind of this cost of doing business. It's just fixed in there. It's X dollars per month for security, for my lease, for whatever it might be. And we've opened up this opportunity to solve the problem of congestion in cities like Los Angeles, Seattle, Savannah, you know, almost everywhere these days. And at the same time solving that problem, they monetize that capacity that has sat there latent up to that point. So we launched in Los Angeles. That's a great case study. We started in LA with 2 yards. My wife and I had just welcomed our second kid into our family. 4 weeks prior to me quitting my job, it was probably not the most intelligent decision I've ever made in my life. But we had 2 facilities and I had a list in Excel of carriers that I thought might be able to utilize those 2 yards or the excess capacity in those 2 yards. So my first official act as CEO of Secure Space and co-founder, founder and CEO of Secure Space was to start cold calling people.
So Lance, if I could interject for a second, and Greg, I'd love for you to weigh in here. Until you're just talking about how, looking back, it may not have been your smartest move in so many words of what you shared. However, you believe that once you're in it to win it wholeheartedly, that the focus you gain and the skin that you've got in the game, that it forces you to get really serious about building the model and taking on the world. Do you relate to that? Was that a big factor in your early stage success?
Oh, 100%. You know, you kind of got to burn the bridges behind you. You know, in the blessing of living in this country, working in this industry is there's a need for talent. So the reality that you can always keep in the back of your mind is, hey, my worst case scenario, if all fails, I need to go get a job, you know, and is that such a bad outcome? Not really, not at all. But for me, you know, I'm the type of person when I do something, I want to jump into it with both feet. And not look back. And so there was a pathway there where I could have been half in, half out. I didn't feel like that would be fair to my employer. And I didn't really feel it would be fair to myself and my co-founders, the folks that jumped on board right after me. So we burned the bridges. We jumped in and we found a way to make it work, starting with those 2 facilities and then just blocking and tackling afterwards.
That's part of the world we grew up in, Lance. You load up the wagon and you head into the wilderness. Right?
Absolutely.
Look, and I think that is an important lesson for people to learn, is that commitment is what's required. Also, interesting, your perspective, right? You start cold calling because when you're a startup founder, you are head chef and bottle washer at the same time. So it's important for people to recognize that. It's not the way people see Airbnb these days or Uber, right? I mean, those companies as I'd said, and as I've told people, it took us 10 years to become an overnight sensation. And that's more common than not. And what we consider a startup is often not at all a startup. Uber's history is long, right? So, well, interesting, the Airbnb model. I wonder, I stayed in Airbnb once and I wound up next door to Justin Bieber and his gang, and man, can they party. But I wonder, can you make sure that somebody has enough space or is, you know, is in a secure space at, mm-hmm. since it's the name. How do you manage that? I'm just curious how you manage that aspect of the business. Do you do the rating thing and all of that sort of thing?
We do not do ratings right now. That's something that we have looked at, and in our brief, you know, history, it's something that it's been on the roadmap. It's just yep. the way these roadmaps go is, you know, if it's not the hottest fire, it just gets pushed down.
Yep.
The way that we confirm that we have secure capacity, we launched, so I left my job in July, August, 2017. We actually launched the full-blown solution, or at least the first iteration of it, a year later in August 2018. So that's the Airbnb marketplace coupled with what we call our gate management system, or GMS. And that gate management system is really how we can control and have an understanding around the capacity of a given facility. Now, there's a large number of our facilities that are simply, hey, we have capacity available. We'd like to list with you. If you can send us a customer, great. So for those facilities, we don't have quite as much control. We don't have quite the data that we might have at a full-blown GMS using facility. And that's 100% kind of the honor system. Operators list their facilities. We have a process we go through to confirm that they own the facility, they're leasing it, et cetera, before we list it live. And then customers, buyers in our marketplace can then request space there, and then the operator of that facility can confirm, approve, or deny that reservation request. It's not quite as fluid as our full-blown solution, which is all hinges around this software, the gate management system. And that is succinctly just the full kit and caboodle set of tools and features that you need to operate a parking or storage facility. We built that from the ground up. One of my co-founders runs a number of parking and storage facilities in Southern California. Ben Satterly, he was crucial to the early days, getting this right. He took a lot of blows on the chin when we got it wrong. But fortunately, he was the proving grounds, the testing grounds for everything that we wanted to do. And so it was in August of 2018 that we launched that. And when we set up a yard on that system, we know down to the spot what's available at that facility, because the operators using that system utilize a set of tools to manage everything that happens at that facility out in the yard. And that allows us to accurately understand where we have capacity and then sell that capacity if it's available and if the operator wants us to do that.
It's a great model. I mean, it's particularly needed because of what we just talked about with some of the West Coast ports, and also just the massive flow of transport. And of course, because so many things coming from west to east, they wind up there a day early or a day or two late, and then they have to be stored until they can get their next appointment or to wait for their appointment as well, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Is that mainly the problem you're solving, or are there other use cases?
Yeah, you know, that would be the merge or the detention charges at the seaports and the rail facilities, respectively. You know, those charges can run $100, $200 a day and up. Meanwhile, we might have a secure space facility right next door, sometimes adjacent to these seaports and rail facilities, for $20 a day, $25 a day. You have to bake in the cost of the dray or the haul from the yard or from the port or rail facility to one of our yards. But if it's going to sit there for 2 or 3 days, your ROI is you know, off the charts. You know, so we started out as kind of that overflow solution. I need something for a day or a week. But really where we've built a lot of momentum and a lot of strength in our business is changing how carriers view real estate. We have customers that started with us in late 2017 and early 2018, just using us here and there, that have grown their footprint within our network on the demand side. These are buyers exponentially, and they use us as their real estate shop. And so in lieu of going out and trying to lease a space, they depend on the Secure Space Network to have something for them. And this opens up a world of possibility. If I'm servicing 5 customers in Southern California, rather than pulling everything from the port out to, say, Compton, where I might have a facility, I can now strategically direct my drivers to Compton, to the Inland Empire somewhere, maybe down in Orange County, maybe all the way up in Los Angeles. And I have 5 Lance's Trucking Company yards now, all hosted on Secure Space, leveraging that latent capacity that's always been in the LA market, but no one ever really unlocked that or, you know, had access to that.
That's great. So you started out cold calling, and it seems like you may have progressed as a leader. And recently you've had something, the ultimate sort of leader, founder experience. So tell us a little bit about this partnership with Envase and how that impacts your business going forward.
You know, we came into 2020 on fire. We had a great 2019, and we were looking at kind of going the traditional, hey, we're a tech startup. We're growing by leaps and bounds, you know, and everything I'm reading tells me I need to go raise some venture capital to continue this party. So we went out to the market, started talking to some people about bringing in capital. We had some commitments from big time investors and others. And I know the CEO at Inbox Technologies, Larry Cuddy, from my time with DCLI and then the early days with Secure Space. And he reached out to me one day and said, hey, what do you think about just joining our team? And we were midstream on the capital raise. You know, things were looking great on that front. And so we started having conversations around that. And long story short, you know, we were acquired by Envase Technologies on October 2nd. So a month and a day ago. So it's still pretty fresh. They are the market leader in intermodal and drayage TMSs for the drayage, for motor carriers in drayage and intermodal. They've purchased now 4 TMS platforms, merging those together. And then Secure Space is the marketplace that will underpin the TMS, the entire TMS platform. So I don't want to get too far into the details and the secret sauce because we're working on some pretty exciting things, but there's definitely an opportunity. We see an opportunity in drayage and intermodal for a holistic platform to come in and kind of help shape the industry moving forward. And I think Envase Technologies is going to drive that.
It's a great cooperative play. Even as it stands, right? Even as you've discussed. So yes. Lots of growth.
I am not jealous of the really sharp technology folks that are wiring together 4 TMS platforms though. But hey, what an outstanding opportunity, and congrats, Lance, to you and your whole team. Cause as Greg alluded to, that's, you know, there's so many rewarding aspects of the entrepreneurial journey, and certainly for a group to see such value in what you've built, you and your team have built, and how y'all have, you know, been in the trenches at, you know, working at it day in and night in to serve the markets you're serving. And that's job well done. So congrats from our entire Supply Chain Now team here. And we look forward to keeping our finger on the pulse for what lies ahead. All right. Speaking of that, we like to consider 2020 as being the business school gift that keeps on giving. I mean, folks are going to, classes and professors are going to be studying this year for decades to come. And especially some of those blind spots that every sector, every industry has uncovered that was not part of their risk management strategy. So that's one of the silver linings to such a historically challenging year. But, you know, beyond that, as you're surveying the global business world that we're all a part of, what's one topic or issue or challenge that really you've been tracking more than others here lately?
One of the things I'm really interested to see when the dust settles on 2020, if the dust ever settles on the pandemic and kind of the repercussions of the pandemic, I'll be interested to see how much the switch in consumer buying behavior sticks. You know, e-commerce has just absolutely exploded. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but Walmart's year over year e-com growth, any retailer, Amazon's just, you know, they're you can't even see them. They're so far out there at this point in time, but how much of that sticks around? Right. I can tell you every single day, I don't know what it is, but we get 2 or 3 packages of something from Amazon or Walmart or somebody. And I think I'm far from unique in that. And these are purchases we would have historically gone down the road and made at a storefront. So one of the things that I'm tracking closely, you know, it's very related to what we do here at Secure Space, space utilization, industrial space utilization. I read something that it takes 3 times as much square footage to handle an e-commerce order of a widget as it might in just retail. So for those sales that switch from offline to online, the need for real estate is just going to explode. And so I'm very in tune and kind of tracking closely with how much of this consumer buying behavior sticks after the COVID hits. After the COVID pandemic crisis fades, if it does, you know, and kind of hard to say.
it's fascinating. You know, Greg, you and I tackle retail trends and news, seems like every week on The Buzz on Mondays. And while it doesn't mean there's any shortage of what maybe is traditional supply chain news, to Lance's point, you know, e-commerce is such a huge factor that's directing so many supply chain resources and people and technology and investment dollars. It's tough to ignore, and it's so interesting to see these trends that are so deeply tied to consumer patterns. And I know we've heard it 1,000 times, but Amazon effect, you know, and how we're looking to apply that in all components and facets of our lives. But Greg, what did you hear there that from what Lance just shared?
Well, I mean, I think that it's interesting, the take there. And I think that there is sustainability in e-commerce, and it's not without its problems. One, the return rate is way too high, right? 30 to 40% returns is way too high. That's not sustainable. Two, the largest carriers are either unable or refusing to allow cost-effective last-mile delivery, though it seems that at least by their commercials, our friends of FedEx are at least giving it a shot, unlike one of the other large carriers who essentially said, let them eat cake. But it's here to stay, I can tell you, because people's eyes have been opened up. I think about this factor that was epiphanal for people. They didn't have any idea how they could buy item X online, and now they're clear, right? Who would have ever bought groceries online, and now that's huge, right? Oh,
absolutely.
Buying groceries online was a fad that failed in the 1950s in Chicago with a company called Jewel, and it's back, and it's probably back for good. But now people, as long as they can figure out how to do it, and as long as the retailers can enable it with an ability to reduce last mile cost and returns cost, it will stay because the retailers will facilitate it.
The next step there, Greg, in home grocery delivery that will revolutionize the whole world is when the drones or bots can come in and put all those groceries away in your kitchen. Can you imagine how transformative that would be?
Well, I'll tell you what will be a pivotal moment in our household is my wife loves to make guacamole. When they can select an appropriate avocado, that's when the transition will occur in our house.
That's been a moving target for me for over a decade. I still can't do that in person.
Right? I know. I can't be trained. I'm totally with you, Lance. I cannot be trained. I don't get it.
This idea right there, huh?
But I don't have AI. I don't have artificial or actually any actual intelligence, so it's harder for me to learn. So maybe the drones can learn better. But look, I think the important thing is that this is solving a problem that is significant. I mean, we're talking about real estate in Los Angeles. We're talking, you know, and right now, Scott, this hit me the other day. We're talking about how much less congested the East Coast, the Southeast ports are. But how sustainable is that? I mean, think about the roads in Savannah and Charleston and Jacksonville with all of its rivers and tributaries and whatnot. There will come congestion in those ports as well. So there's a lot of room. And in fact, Georgia, and I think now South Carolina, have already built inland ports just to get that stuff away from the seaside. So there will come those opportunities for every port. And remember also that the supply chain is realigning. Call it reshoring, nearshoring, optimal shoring. I can't even remember all the names of shoring, but wherever it comes from, it's going to come on a ship or a truck. And, you know, we're going to need a place to put those. And I know where Lance is going with Envos. I'm not going to say, but that is also going to be transformational for drivers as overland transportation continues as well.
Oh, yeah. You see this. I think the ATRI just came out with their top 10 issues that carriers face and top 10 issues that drivers contend with. On the carrier list, truck parking is nowhere to be found. Number one spot for the 2021 survey, or late 2020, 2021, I can't remember the date, but it's one that came out 2 weeks ago. Truck drivers, truck parking is the number one issue. It's exponentially harder now than it was pre-pandemic. And it's only going to get worse. You know, the DOTs at the state level, at the federal level, many other public entities are, you know, scrambling to try to find options to increase the available capacity for truck parking. It is so expensive to take a bare piece of dirt and turn it into a lot that's suitable for truck parking. Meanwhile, you have tens of thousands of facilities, trucking terminals, warehouses, distribution centers, all over the country, purpose-built for trucks, and they're sitting there with open, vacant space every single day. I don't care if it's in Los Angeles, New York, or Omaha.
So to our listeners, you know, for a couple of those of you that may not be really closely attuned to this challenge that our dear truck drivers are having, I mean, you're talking about drivers that keep the economy moving, they keep e-commerce moving, that, you know, protect the psyche of the American consumer and elsewhere, global consumer. First hit my radar, Lance, when there's a freight task force in Atlanta, here in Atlanta, that commissioned a study trying to identify the current inventory of safe and secure spaces for trucks to park. And it came on the heels of, unfortunately, a truck driver in the upstate of South Carolina that couldn't find a well-lit, safe, good spot to pull over. And so he had to pull over in a less than optimal, it was not lit, and he ended up being robbed and lost his life. And tragic, right? However, the good that comes out of that huge sacrifice, hopefully, is tackling this challenge that such a critical component of our global supply chain struggle with. To your point, number one topic, right? Safe, secure parking. We got to put it in a headlock. And that's where I know Greg and I and the Supply Chain Now team love what you and the Secure Space team are doing, because it is such a huge challenge for some of the most important people involved in keeping things moving. So really appreciate that, Lance.
Yeah, it definitely. You know, it's far from solved. You know, we think that we have a piece of the solution. You know, this isn't a plug for us or anything like that. There is a need for a multitude of solutions to come to the table to solve this. There's something like 300,000 or 400,000 delineated truck parking spaces in the United States of America. There's 2 million trucks on the road every single day. You can see the supply and demand imbalance is quite extreme in those numbers. We think that we can help solve part of that problem, but it's going to take a lot of different entities coming together to provide a holistic solution. And it's crucial. It impacts driver safety. It impacts their ability to earn a living. So many different areas of a driver's day can be dictated by or influenced by where they're going to find a safe place to park.
And then the other bottom line component that, Lance, you're speaking towards, that at least came out of this local study, is that on average, drivers are spending over an hour just finding a spot between their phone and other things they do to find a parking spot. It was eating up into their hours of service. So to your point, maximizing, you know, those windows of active driving. So anyway, really appreciate what you're doing. Love the smart technology, the democratic elements, the sustainability you've got factored into the model. I mean, it's really, Greg, I mean, it's a wonderful, innovative, entrepreneurial story, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I love that it has been recognized and leveraged upon and combined with other technologies, right, to create even more impact in the marketplace. That is really important.
Agreed. All right. So let's make sure, Lance, our listeners can connect with you and Secure Space and learn a lot more about where you are and where you're headed. So what's the best way for folks to do that?
Yeah, the easiest way to stay in touch, we're pretty active on LinkedIn. So if you're on LinkedIn, you can look me up, Lance Theobald, or Secure Space. We've got a little bit of a different spelling. It's all one word, SecurSpace. So if you check us out on LinkedIn, you'll find links to our website, more about us, or you can connect with me and, you know, see the occasional video of me walking around an empty piece of dirt or concrete like a kid in a candy shop. I get excited when I see a little bit of daylight on an industrial piece of real estate. So
counting trailer slots, you're going one there, one there.
Exactly. Well, now, he's a trained accountant, so, or yeah, has an accounting degree, so his ability to check that is above my payroll, but pay grade. But Lance, you remember, I've got one question to ask, because you remember the A-Team in the 80s, right?
I remember the A-Team, yeah.
Okay, remember their awesome van that B.A. Baracus was really proud of?
Yeah.
Okay, so we've got a Supply Chain Now version of that van. And okay, when we get back into the normal and get back in person and get back to, you know, doing some of this stuff that we're doing right now in person, I want to be able to count on you. Greg and I want to count on you to find space for our van parking from show to show. Can we count on you?
You can count on me. Okay. I'll have a spot with your name on it.
That's awesome.
Awesome. Well, Lance, really, you know, I appreciate your down-to-earth kind of demeanor and disposition, and despite all your success and growth. It's really refreshing, and we'll have to have you back on as we continue to track your progress and what y'all are doing over at Secure Space. Congrats again on the big news from October.
Yeah.
And we wish you all the best. So really appreciate your time here today.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you, Greg.
Thanks, Lance.
Awesome. Well, Greg, we've been chatting with Lance Theobald, CEO and co-founder of Secure Space. I don't know about you. I could have kept talking with Lance for a couple more hours, but what was your favorite part, Greg, of our interview here with Lance?
How fast it happened. That was my favorite part. I mean, it is sometimes a slog in a startup to find a spot, but you know, when you found a solution whose time has come, that demand builds really, really rapidly. And I think the founder story here too is important, right? In recognizing one sort of subconsciously probably being prepared for this by living in a trucking town or near a trucking town and always having that awareness probably in his mind to look for semi trucks, maybe even the fascination that I do. I love semis and any big equipment really, but and then to have adapted that from his military logistics career to his civilian military or logistics career into seeing a problem on the street and translating that into a solution. I don't know if people understand what a special gift that is to be able to do that. And that's just really, really impressive. And then to recognize not only the initial problem that they're solving, but that there are other problems out there, and then leveraging up with this partner with Envos to be able to do that is, you know, that's a
sky's the limit.
It's the ultimate startup story right yes. there.
And the art of the possible, being able to see that so clearly. So Lance, I told you we'd talk about you as if you weren't still in the shot, but really enjoyed your story resonates a lot with us as fellow entrepreneurs and just excited about what's to come. So big thanks to Lance Theobald again with Secure Space. A big thanks to Greg White here. Enjoyed this story. And to our listeners, hopefully you enjoyed it as much as we did. If you're interested in learning and hearing similar interviews, you can check us out at supplychainnow.com. As we always wrap up every show, we want to challenge you like we challenge our team. Do good, give forward, and be the change that's needed. Hey, be like Lance. And with that note, we'll see you next time here on Supply Chain Now. Thanks, everybody.